This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Jury selection is underway in the trial of the former Minneapolis police officer charged in George Floyd's death. Derek Chauvin faces charges of second-degree murder and manslaughter in the May 2020 death of George Floyd. The process began Tuesday and is now expected to last about 3 weeks. It started a day later than originally scheduled, due in part to a request by prosecutors to reinstate a third-degree murder charge.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, are you following the latest from CBS? I'll get you caught up right here. We got a lot to get into. We'll take a look at some, well, I think just perplexing polls. Attitudes towards BLM and George Floyd and Antifa, they're changing. I'll tell you what's going on. I'm putting my finger on the pulse of it for you. Stay with me. We got a lot to get into, and I want to fill you in on what's happening on Capitol Hill and a whole lot of other things. Before I do, I just want to just ask you to do me a favor. The chaplain today, I think, is going to be a special chaplain, and I hope you'll join me to pray. I hope you'll join me just prior to it. I've been wanting to share something with you for a long time, and I can today. Okay, so in about 55 minutes, I'll share that news with you, and I think you're going to be blessed by it. And in fact, I know you'll be blessed by this news. All right, so make sure you join me about 1 hour from now, 3 o'clock, and pray with me. Let's pray the chaplain. Mercy is really the solution to the ills and the problems that are facing the culture today. I don't know if you are tracking what's going on. I know it can get kind of, well, tedious, sometimes boring, sometimes too deep. What's happening with the House? They passed the Senate's version of the so-called American Rescue Plan. That's such a great title for it, isn't it? The American Rescue Plan. Nearly $2 trillion, though. That's such an astronomical amount of money. Oh, my gosh. And as we talked about over the past week or two, I mean, it includes a lot of giveaways to special interests, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's home state of New York. I mean, the bill's supposed to be signed by the president tomorrow, but apparently there's pressure on him to get it signed sooner so that the checks could start rolling out a little bit earlier. He signed it a half an hour ago, just about a half an hour ago. Not clear yet whether and when those checks will be hitting your bank accounts, but that's good news for you, right? So congratulations. You're going to get that little bump. The problem with the bill, though, it includes the fact that it adds to our federal debt. And this is something, even before COVID, I've been warning about. I mean, if you ever take a look at the national debt clocks, and you should do that, you should do a search for them, they're almost frightening at how fast those things tick. It includes a lot of money, this bill, too, for abortions, and you know how I feel about that. Our bishops aren't happy either. What did they say before Joe Biden was elected? This is the preeminent priority for voters. Life has got to be the top of your ticket. It's got to be the top of that pyramid. The bishops say it's unconscionable. They wrote yesterday after the bill passed the House, he said that Congress has passed a bill without critical protections needed to ensure that billions of taxpayer dollars are used for life-affirming health care and not for abortions. Now, Melissa Odin is an abortion survivor. She was a guest on this show several times. Beautiful woman, great story. She runs the Abortion Survivor Network. And I was reading something about her earlier today. She said, as survivors of abortion, personally, she says, I find this offensive. It's offensive to fund the very act that is meant to end our lives. This is a woman who survived an abortion in the womb. I mean, I won't go into the grisly details of her story, but you ought to look it up. So she knows firsthand she would be dead otherwise. She did not survive. And now Joe Biden and your taxpayer dollars are going to fund this culture of death. She says, we know firsthand that abortion is not a solution to the problems. It only perpetuates them. And if you're a pregnant mother listening to me right now, I want to speak to you. I want you to listen because maybe God's talking to you. Life is a gift. It's a gift from Him. It will be your greatest regret to abort that child. Believe me when I tell you that. If you choose life today, it will be your greatest blessing. It'll be your greatest blessing. I really believe that. If you had an abortion and you hear this, I know sometimes it hurts. But know God's mercy is greater. Your sin, your offense is but a drop in the ocean of His mercy. So Let's pray that this country gets it right. There's a new poll out, too, on registered voters and what they think about banning men who claim to be women from playing sports, another issue that I've been trying to bring to you. There's a bill in Mississippi that would do that. I saw this report in Politico. They asked about 2,000 people, and about 53% support the ban, only a third oppose it, and surprisingly, more men than women were in favor of the ban, with 59% of men, 46% of women supporting it. Republicans, of course, were overwhelmingly in favor of it, but Democrats were just about evenly split. So let's hope that, unlike what happened with so-called same-sex marriage, opposition will only grow, and the pendulum won't swing in the other direction. And like, I've not talked a lot about Governor Cuomo, just one little bit of news regarding him. Governor Cuomo is in more legal hot water. You might be following this story. Six women have come forward claiming sexual assault, that he groped, they groped them or acted inappropriately. One woman said he groped her while the two were alone in the room in the executive mansion in Albany earlier this year. But the claim has been referred to the Albany police. And now, according to the New York Post, more than 55 Democrat state legislators are now calling for him to step down, for him to resign. He said no. I often think of Governor Northam, right, who was caught in blackface, or supposedly was caught in blackface. He denied it. He never stepped down, right? And the media protected him. They let him go. He still holds his post. So maybe Cuomo's taking a chapter out of his book. Imagine if Cuomo was a Republican, though. Do you think the media would give him a pass? I don't think so. Anyway, they're citing not only the serial sexual harassment claims, but also the number of people who died in nursing homes because of his policing and sending people who were sick, still sick with COVID, back to nursing homes and also to institutions for mentally disabled people. But it's not like that he's going to be able to ride this out like Governor Northam did. I who knows? I mean, I doubt it. You never know. One final weird story here. I promise I'd talk to you about it. Then I want to talk with Ryan Bomberger, who's joining me here. Tennessee, they are looking at naming an official state hymn. That hymn will also be a tribute to one of the state's biggest stars. You know, who comes from Tennessee, right? You love country music? None other than Dolly Parton. This is her version of Amazing Grace, and it's being considered right now by the state legislature to be the official version of their famous hymn. Listen. I love her voice, huh? That's a little Dolly for you. That's a great song. I love it. Good for you, Tennessee. I hope it passes, God bless Tennessee. A lot of people are moving to Tennessee. Cost of living there is pretty inexpensive, and, who knows? Anyway, we'll see what happens. I thought it was just a kind of a fun story. You probably have... maybe you haven't been following. I've been following it loosely. I'm actually, to be honest with you, kind of tired of this... the whole Black Lives narrative that's been going on, and Antifa, and the George Floyd situation. You've probably heard the trial of Derek Chauvin, the main police officer who was charged in the death of George Floyd last May. It's underway right now in Minneapolis. And right now, the main thing going on is the jury selection. And six jurors have been selected so far, but there was also a question about what charges are going to be brought against him. And the judge in the trial dropped the third-degree murder charge, and then the prosecution appealed that decision, and the state appeals court ordered the judge to put it back into the case, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case, leaving the appeals court, leaving that ruling stand. So, of course, George Floyd's death last summer, horrific. I mean, it should cry for outrage. It was horrible what we saw there, and it sparked, unfortunately, months of riots and unrest in our country in the middle of a pandemic, and what we saw with the looting and the violence and the arson and the horrific behavior, that's just as inexcusable. At that time, approval of Black Lives Matter was pretty high. Most people believed that Chauvin had actually murdered George Floyd, but there was a new poll out, and I do want to talk to you about it, because we'll talk to Ryan about this as well. The USA Today, and another poll. I forget the other one that was doing it. They found this month that only 36% said that George Floyd was murdered. And I was struck by that. If I would have taken a microphone to the streets months ago, they would have mentioned, this police officer, Chauvin. But today, 36%, one out of three people. Both others said it was police negligence. Some didn't know. Some said it was an accident. The poll also found that trust in blacks and Black Lives Matters. I can't get that word out of my mouth today. Black Lives Matter. BLM is what I should say. Fell 10 points, right? Fell 10 points to 50%. 40% of Americans believe that race relations are getting worse. And those are some very, I think, revealing numbers. And it points to the serious problem in race relations in our country. And we're going to talk to Ryan about that coming up. But let me share with you right now a CBS news report. They sat down with the cousin of George Floyd. And what she had to say, I thought, was revealing. Also, the Heritage Foundation put together a fantastic explanation of how Black Lives supports a nefarious agenda. Jake, let's do this. Instead of playing the CBS clip of her cousin, let's share right now. I think what the Heritage Foundation did was revealing. Listen to this.
Many see the slogan Black Lives Matter, or BLM, as a noble plea for equal treatment under the law. It's a cry to secure the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everyone. But what does the Black Lives Matter organization actually stand for? To find out, look no further than their leaders. Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Here's Cullors in a revealing 2015 interview.
We actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists.
Visit the Black Lives Matter website and read the list of demands to get a sense of how deep a transformation they seek. One of those demands proclaims, quote, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another. We can't be certain, but it's hard to believe this radical agenda is what most signed up for when they made that hashtag Black Lives Matter social media post, or that every employee, customer, or shareholder at Nike endorses a disruption of the family."
Well, very telling. Very, very telling. You might have wondered how BLM, how the whole movement got started. I'll just share a little bit more with you. Here's what the Heritage Foundation found out.
Garza first coined the phrase in 2013, the day George Zimmerman was acquitted of murdering Trayvon Martin. Her friend Cullors added the hashtag and joined the words so it could travel through social media. Tometi created the digital platform BlackLivesMatter.com. According to Robert Stilson of the Capital Research Center, the group became a self-styled global network in 2014 and a fiscally sponsored project of a separate progressive nonprofit in 2016. This evolution has helped embolden an agenda vastly more ambitious than a national defunding of police. The goals of the Black Lives Matter organization go far beyond what most people think. They're hiding in plain sight, there for the world to see. If only we read beyond the slogans and the summaries of the movement they helped to create. It's a distinction with a profound difference. Their radical Marxist agenda is bent on supplanting the basic building blocks of society, the family, replacing it with the state, and destroying the economic system that has lifted more people from poverty than any other. Theirs is a blueprint for misery, not justice. It must be rejected.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. There's so many different things that we are seeing. The attack on the family. Why is that in the crosshairs of this agenda? We are facing today a serious problem with race relations in our country. And look, Wesley Smith, who was a guest on this program frequently, he did a piece for the National Review, and he reported that the national in the article that he wrote, and I don't have it in front of me here, but when I went through it, and if I can find it, I'll get it up there for you. Jake's going to find it for you. He'll get it up there for you. He reported that the American Medical Association pulled a podcast that was on racism in medicine in the U.S. today because one of the doctors was apparently insufficiently sensitive to the issue. And, of course, no one could tell now what he said because they have been censored. So where are we heading? You know, and why are numbers changing? I'm joined by Ryan Bomberger. He's an Emmy Award-winning creative professional, co-founder and chief creative officer of the Radiance Foundation. His latest book is out. You might want to check it out. I always enjoy talking to him. I think he's both rational and balanced, and it's always, he's just a good guy. It's called Not Equal, The Civil Rights Gone Wrong. Not Evil. I'm having trouble speaking today. Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong. It's the title of the book, and you can check that out at theradiancefoundation.org. Hey, Ryan, it's good to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Always great to be with you.
So this poll, let's start there. I mean, you heard about, we know BLM, you and I have spoken about them in the past, but the fact that attitudes in the country are changing, just over the series of several months, you know, USA Today, and I think it was Ipsos, they found that 36% found that George Floyd's, you know, was murdered. That's it, 36. Now, if you would have asked people 9 months ago, you know, I would have thought that number would have been off the charts. Why, in your opinion, are these attitudes towards the officer changing, or even towards Black Lives Matter in general?
Because people were easily swayed. To be honest, I mean, these polls are very, first of all, they're just unreliable anyway. We make news stories out of these polls, which are often misleading. But I think because people want to emotionally attach, they want to empathize. And what we've seen is a barrage from mainstream media feeding a particular narrative. And we're getting a little more truth about what has happened. And so I think people are easily swayed. Some people are just kind of tired of it. It's tired of what I say, it, not the tragedy of George Floyd's death, just tired of being manipulated by mainstream media. I don't know. I think there are a lot of factors that go into that sharp change, but I think people are being informed by sources outside of mainstream media that are helping to form that opinion.
So trust in Black Lives Matter dropped 10%. That's, I think, a pretty significant drop. Why are they losing their following? Is it because in the moment everybody wanted to be socially in line? I mean, it sounds right. And first of all, I've said this before. I think the terms Black Lives Matter is brilliant. It's a brilliant slogan. You know, Black Lives Matter, of course, Black Lives Matter. And I think a lot of people want to get behind and say, hey, I believe that. But they didn't necessarily know the agenda or the ideology that drove that group, as you heard the Heritage Foundation report on. Are people now becoming aware of that, or are these people just tired of this whole story? I mean, how are you reading these numbers?
Well, largely, I mean, part of what we do through the organization that my wife and I run called the Radiance Foundation is we inform people about the context of issues, and we've been informed about the Black Lives Matter movement. There are so many people who don't know anything about it. In fact, you have certain leaders, and I guess I won't name them, but very prominent leaders who say the movement was hijacked. It was never hijacked. It was radical from the beginning. These particular leaders just weren't paying attention. I mean, you can go to blacklivesmatter.com or the Movement for Black Lives and actually read their manifestos, read the extremism of their positions. And I think what's happened is when people have gone there, they're like, wait a minute. I believe in the principle that Black Lives Matter 100%. Right. I mean, I'm biracial, quote unquote, black and white. Of course, I believe that Black Lives Matter. But I think they're being completely turned off when they realize, wait a minute, there's a lot more to this, and there's a lot of deception. It's a Marxist-led, very anti-family, very pro-abortion movement. And so I think people are finding out and turning off.
Yeah, you know, I hope so. That's what I'm trying to do here, is raise awareness to what is behind this. They made a lot of money last year. I saw one report where they announced last month they took in $90 million last year. That's huge, because this organization is not that old. Michael Brown's father, when he heard about it, he wasn't very happy about it, because he says, hey, I'm not getting any of that money. What's happening within the movement itself? Are we going to start seeing arguing within the movement? And what do they plan to do with that money?
They're going to plan to do what they've been doing, is moving forward an agenda that has nothing to do with raising up, vulnerable black communities. In fact, that $90 million, they should probably apply it to all the communities that they've destroyed. But then again, that was $2 billion worth of damage. Yeah. So $90 million is a drop in the bucket. You know, it's furthering the agenda and the the aspirations of the leaders, the three co-leaders. I mean, one has gone on to sign on with, Warner Brothers or Turner in order to be some sort of consultant to do TV programming for children. Can't wait for that to come out. But unfortunately, you have these situations like Michael Brown Sr., who's saying, wait a minute, this is all predicated on the tragedy of my son's death, which that's a whole other issue we could discuss in and of itself. But I see an implosion. I really do. I see you have all these competing interests. You have a lot of corruption that has defined the Black Lives Matter movement in the first place. And I don't know, deception can only last for so long.
Right.
My hope is that we can actually deal with issues of racial justice, but we don't have to embrace a broken and deceptive movement in order to do it.
Yeah. My guest today, Ryan Bomberger, if you want to check him out, his website is theradiancefoundation.org. He has a book called Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong. Ryan, I have to take a short pause. Stay with me for just a minute. When we come back, I do want to talk about the Marxist underpinning to this. And if you want to join us, I'll tell you what, I'd love to have you be part of the conversation. You can dial in now. I only have Ryan for a few moments. The number's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We're back with more right after this.
Ask and you shall receive. That's what Jesus said, and that's just what we do at Mass. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 20th Lenten lesson on the Mass. After the homily and the creed come the prayers of the faithful. As Pope Benedict XVI observed, we are at our most attentive in prayer when we're asking God for something or thanking Him. The prayers of the faithful are not mandatory at every Mass, but why miss an opportunity to get something from God for yourself or for others? The priest introduces and closes the prayers of the faithful, while the reader announces the various intentions and invites the congregation to pray by saying, "We pray to the Lord," and the people respond, "Lord, hear our prayer." There's an order to the petitions, starting with universal needs of the church and moving down to local needs, often mentioning by name the sick and recently deceased in the parish.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon central.
And join us for Class After Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 12:30 central every day on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Have been summoned as potential jurors.
In the jury selection started a day late, so lawyers wasted little time.
The dismissal of minority potential jurors drew an objection from the prosecution.
The streets were calmer after hundreds marched around the courthouse Monday. But in a city that has seen violence surge since George Floyd's death, including a 14-year-old who was killed last night.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, jury selection is underway. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. I'm joined by Ryan Bomberger today. We're taking a look at, the attitudes in our country right now, not only with Black Lives Matter, but with race. I was sharing a poll that I saw that said that 36% now believe that George Floyd was murdered. If you would have asked people, you know, months ago, that would have been markedly higher. Some didn't know whether it was an accident or police negligence. And I know there's more evidence that's still going to be revealed. We'll see what that reveals. But Black Lives Matter is also getting the shadow of disenchantment. Their percentage in this particular poll fell by 10%. But as my guest says, you know, polls, you know, how much can you really trust them? And Ryan, it's good to have you back. Ryan wrote a book called Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong, and he is the founder of the RadianceFoundation.org. They got a new campaign coming out on racism. Before I go to the phones, very quickly, if you could, you and I were talking during the break. You're about to launch a campaign addressing the issue of race in the country. What are you seeing and what are you hoping to achieve?
Well, as someone who is both black and white, who is as black as Frederick Douglass, my heart is really to bring racial reconciliation. And the way that we do that is to have honest conversations, not people censored, right. Not people, you know, scolded for not using the correct terminology. But we really want to launch this campaign that really shows the beauty in all of our hues. We're not calling for anybody to be colorblind, but God created us to be colorful.
Amen.
So we're excited about this One Human Race ad campaign launching soon.
I love that.
In a city near you.
I love that. And we're not called to be colorblind. God has created us to be colorful. I love that. Well said. Radiance Foundation, theradiancefoundation.org. You can learn more. Well, when you're ready to launch, let us know. I think this is really an important message that should be heard. I mean, so often the division in the country is highlighted. I think solutions, we need more of them. Let's go to the phones. We'll grab a couple quick calls. I know I only have you for a few moments. Bob is listening to us in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Bob, thanks for calling in. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I enjoy your show, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks.
I'm kind of nervous, so bear with me.
Sure, sure.
When the issue of George Floyd gets brought up, it makes me angry because so much has been left out. I'm a retired police officer, and a lot of the evidence that is now coming out was never released initially.
Right.
You know, George Floyd was on fatal amounts of methamphetamine and fentanyl. His lungs were three times their normal size. He was in his last few minutes of life before the police ever showed up. You know, I've talked to other officers about this. Right. I've had my knee on people's neck. You know, is it you do what you need to do to control the situation? And was everything done correctly? Probably not. But that officer did not kill George Floyd.
Right. Well,
and, you know, everybody says this looks so brutal. Mm-hmm. Believe me, if the public could see what police officers were trained to do to maintain a situation and control a situation, you'd probably be absolutely shocked. And that's just the way it is. It just seems like so many people live on a fluffy white cloud guarded by unicorns. It's not reality.
Well, Bob, you bring up a great point. And first of all, thanks for your service. You're now retired. I'm assuming you said you're a former police officer, so I'm glad.
Yeah, I still work part-time. I still work part-time, but I know how horrible it looked, but...
Yeah, the optics of it were bad. I mean, it looked like his hand was in his pocket. I don't think it was. But to your point, and Ryan, we can talk about this. You know, I never want to jump, you know, to rush to a conclusion to all the evidence is put forward. And, you know, cities burned because of the optics of what we saw there. And honestly, it was outrageous. I mean, people saw it, and there was a visceral reaction. So I guess we will see in the days ahead as this jury plays out, ultimately, you know, what protocol was, what policy was, whether... George Floyd was near death. There's a whole lot that's going to have to come to the fore. What do you expect that will come from this trial? Do you think that we're going to see more rioting, more burning, more looting afterwards if the officer is you know vindicated, if he's let off, or the verdict is light on him? What do you expect happening, or is this already a foregone conclusion? Is Antifa, Black Lives Matter, already making plans for whatever happens here? What are your thoughts?
Well, we've seen how they've been affirmed. Their actions have been affirmed all summer. They've not been condemned in any real way, particularly by one particular political party. So they know that they kind of have the go-ahead to do this. And they've seen that it generates a lot of profit, right. A lot of revenue, I should say.
Right.
And so it's a tragedy that he died. And the thing about the poll changing, this is what drives me crazy. Everyone wants to act like judge and jury, and right. We have so little of the information, which is why we should not be jumping to these conclusions.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy that he died,
it
absolutely. But we don't know all the details. And that's why I always have to, you know, add on to my statements. We don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pass judgment on something that I know about 1% of what's actually happened.
It's hard to do, too, because when you look at the optics, you're like, oh, my gosh, that looks so horrible. I mean, you, as a compassionate person, you want to come to the aid of the vulnerable. But you're right, and I'm the same way. I mean, you've got to wait till all the facts come in. That's the beauty of our judicial system. James is listening in San Jose. He wants to talk with you, too. James, good afternoon. James, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir. Oh, we lost James. All right, Bill in New Jersey. Good afternoon. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, we're doing well. Thanks.
All right. Good, good. A few quick bullets. I'll hang up listening to your thoughts. I like the slogan, Unborn Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting when you say that to people of the BLM movement, how angry and hostile they become. And what that indicates to me is that they believe in the destruction of their own race, because if they are going to get angry and say, no, they don't matter, then they're believing and agreeing with the destruction of their race. And Margaret Sanger would be very happy to hear that. You know, we also have to think about another bullet point. Japanese lives matter. Indian lives matter. All lives matter, as we know. I honestly believe, as a third bullet point, that the media is stoking the flames of racism in this country. There's racism everywhere. There always has been since the beginning of time. In fact, when we brought the slaves over from Africa in the 1600s, a lot of the slave owners were black, selling the black slaves. So my point is that slavery, and it's, I think we all have to agree, it's a lot better in this country today than it was in the 1800s, than it was in the 1950s, the 1970s. Yeah. But there's still racism, and I get that. But my point is the media is on TV every night saying, you know, people don't like black people, and they stoke that message, right, and it gets everyone riled up, and they want to go out and fight. Mm-hmm. Last point, I told my teenagers when they were kids, if you are going to physically strike a police officer with an object or your fists or enter into a physical altercation with mm-hmm. them, call me on your cell phone and say goodbye first, because something can go wrong. No, it doesn't give the police the right to kill you, right, or her, or do injustices to you, but you're putting yourself at risk. We have to get back to the fact that they're authority and we have to obey the law. That's it, gentlemen. I'll hang up and listen to your call.
Bill,
thank you very much.
Thank you. I really appreciate the comments. And a couple things, and this is right up your alley. He started talking about unborn Black Lives Matter and then expanded to All Lives Matter. We heard that mantra during the George Floyd riots. A lot of people are saying, hey, yes, we Black Lives Matter, but so do all lives. What do you make of that? You know, do you have a problem with that argument? Is that a good argument? Let's take that first point there. You heard what he said. I'll let you respond.
Well, he had a lot of great points, but absolutely unborn Black Lives Matter, but not to the Black Lives Matter movement that signed a solidarity agreement in 2016 with the reproductive justice movement declaring that abortion is a right. So I guess the hashtag only some Black Lives Matter wasn't as catchy. So you've got a radically pro-abortion movement that stands in solidarity with Planned Parenthood that kills 318 black lives every single day. So that's why they get upset when you bring up the issue of abortion, because the leadership knows that they stand in solidarity with the abortion industry. And the whole thing now, it's racist, supposedly now, to say all lives matter. But yet Alicia Garza, one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, she said that as well. All lives matter in a college presentation actually here in Virginia. So she can say it, but it's racist now for people to say that all lives matter. Right. If we don't understand the premise as to why any life matters, then none of it matters.
That's so true.
Created by God, so white, true, black, and every hue in between.
That's why I love having you on. Ryan, you're so right. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Respect for the dignity of the human person, and especially the value of life, the intrinsic value of human life. And, you know, we know that slavery and racism is an intrinsic evil, period. Abortion's an intrinsic evil. That's got to be proclaimed. So all lives matter. That was one of his first points. The other was that the media is stroking the flames of division and racism in the country. They keep this mantra going. How much fuel are they throwing on this, or are they just pulling back the veil and showing the true, the true scene behind the curtain? I mean, how do you read it?
Well, that's the DNA of the media industry. They want people's attention, and so the way they do that is if it bleeds, it reads, right? So that's the phrase. When Ferguson happened, I remember I went down to Ferguson shortly after that all happened, and this is the way that I see mainstream media. They're like vultures that fly from city to city, picking apart the carcass of the destruction there, and then they fly off to another city. It's what they do. Yeah. They stoke, they foment racial division all the time. And of course they throw out racism and racist as an accusation and a charge when we don't even understand what is the definition of racism. Yeah. How are people even defining it? They have used it so much, they have diluted it so much that it actually in some ways has become meaningless. It's just the way to shut down conversation. Oh, you're a racist. Oh, you're a bigot. Right. Oh, you're, you know, white supremacist. I'm not any of those things, but okay. And you can't even have any kind of constructive conversation, but mainstream media is leading it. But we have to understand who these people are and what their intention and their desire is. Harmony isn't their intention as far as mainstream media. And with Black Lives Matter, forgiveness and reconciliation is not their intention either. If you understand who the people are and what their intentions are, I think you understand better than what their worldview is.
To the third point, then I'll grab another call. Respect for authority, especially lawful authority. it really does bother me. To his point, he's right. I've always taught my children to respect. I mean, you've got to show respect for authority. When I see some people totally, you know, the officer says, hey, could you please step out of the car, and they don't want to get out of the car, or they fight, or they don't comply, you know that that's not going to end well. It's going to exacerbate the situation. Why are we seeing that today? I mean, maybe I come from a different generation, or my mindset's different, or I was raised differently. I don't know. I've always had a respect for authority. I want to pass that on to my children and, hey, get a mutual respect. And I don't see the purpose for violence in those situations or for not complying. But respect for authority was his point. He taught his kids something very similar. Your thoughts on what we're seeing today and why it seems that so many are not complying? A lot of these things go out of control, as you know, because of that.
Well, we have to, you look at American history, and yes, there is a history of abuse. I mean, horrendous abuse by police on people of my complexion. That's not anything that's in denial here. However, we're talking about a culture today that has just a resistance to authority in any shape or form that it takes. And so when it comes to police, who in that situation, it's the most important to be respectful because they can act with deadly force, yeah. Unlike a teacher, unlike a politician.
Right.
I was raised in a family with white, black, Native American, Vietnamese, and we were all taught exactly the same thing in how to respect those who are in authority above us, especially with police. I've had run-ins with police for things that in situations I did nothing wrong, and I treated them with nothing but respect. There were things I might have wanted to have said I know that I didn't do any wrong, but unfortunately that's not how it plays out. And that's not how a lot of young people that I've worked with over the years, a lot of teenagers, it's not what they're being encouraged to do.
Yeah.
And that doesn't lead to a positive outcome. But, you know, police have to be held accountable. Absolutely. I stand with our men and women in blue. They protect and they serve us. They give their lives for us. And there are a handful, who abuse that authority, and they need to be held to account. They need to be, justice needs to be served 100%.
Yeah.
But we can't live in a culture that thinks that you can just, resist authority everywhere, at every place, every time. And that's the culture that I feel like it's being emboldened by mainstream media that is siding with them and sympathizing with those who are taking the wrongful actions.
Well, we've got a number of calls that want to join the conversation. Maria in Miami was saying if somebody does something unlawful, the police officer has to take control. James in San Jose says, doesn't matter if he was on drugs, what happened was wrong. He should never have had a knee on the neck. Marjorie in New Jersey is saying, I saw films from the body camera police, and they tried to deal with him for a lot of stuff. People did not see what happened besides the 7 minutes. And the calls go on, but I am out of time. Wish I could get them all, and I'm grateful for everyone who's still on hold. Ryan, let's talk again. Let me know when that campaign kicks off, because I think it's important. The RadianceFoundation.org, I know that's a nonprofit group. Your book, Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong. How can people get that? At your website or all bookstores, or what's the best way to connect?
They can go to our website and go to Amazon, several places they can get it. So before the next time we get to talk.
Oh, I always enjoy it.
So much to talk about.
Now, you're so rational, and you say it so clearly. It's always good to have you here. We'll catch up soon. Keep up your good work, okay?
Thanks, Drew.
That's Ryan Thanks Bomberger. So he's an Emmy Award-winning creative professional. As I said, he founded the Radiance Foundation. Check out his book, Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong. You can get it at theradiancefoundation.org. That's his website. It's about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk more. I've got to get into another issue. And then at the top of the hour, if you're just joining me in about 15 minutes, I've got something so exciting to share with you. I am pumped. I am psyched. It's going to bless you. I'm telling you, you're going to love this. So 15 minutes from now, stay with me. I'll fill you in on that and more.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
House Democrats are rethinking the entire U.S. voting system. They're pushing massive legislation, 791 pages to be exact, full of major changes to our elections.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, this is a huge story. It's something I wish I could spend a lot of time on. I will revisit this in greater detail, but I want to bring it before you. You've heard about H.R. 1, that bill that NBC was just talking about. Big, big piece of legislation. It's a bill that got passed last week by the House that's over in the Senate right now. It's called For the People Act of 2021. And if what you're hearing about it is any indicator, this bill actually should be renamed. It should be called Against the People of 2021. It's supposed to be a major reform on how you vote in this country, and it would reform it all right, only it would reform it in the wrong way. So Representative Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader for Republicans, explained ultimately what's at stake.
Now here's what it would do. First, H.R. 1 sends public dollars to fund political campaigns. Not to build roads or bridges, but to add 600% to every small dollar donated by Americans. So let's say Mary from Michigan donates $200 to preferred candidate. Well, now you have just chipped in another $1,200. Second, H.R. 1 would legalize voting for convicted felons all over the country, even if they were convicted of election fraud. Does that make sense to you? Not only is this dangerous, it's unconstitutional. Now, third, H.R. 1 would weaken the security of our elections and make it harder to protect against voter fraud. Here's how. It would automatically register voters from DMV databases. Voting is a right, not a mandate. In most cases, this legislation would actually prevent officials from removing ineligible voters from the rolls and would make it much more difficult to verify the accuracy of voter information. So future voters might be underage, dead, or illegal immigrants, or maybe even registered one, two, or three times.
Yeah, look, it goes on. I could spend, like I said, a lot of time unpacking this for you. The thing that I saw, and the bill goes so far to regulate how nonprofits can let their supporters know about legislative issues. You know, I'm always bringing these to you, those that threaten, you know, our morality or the things that you should just be aware of for not just your family, but for those you love. Right now, of course, a 501c3 like Relevant Radio, a nonprofit, can't endorse, you know, political candidates, but we can tell you about legislative and policy issues. We can talk about those things that matter, right? We aren't going to say, hey, vote for candidate A or B, but here are the issues that matter, and here's how you should have a well-formed conscience in approaching those. Under a bill like this, you wouldn't be able to do that. You know, we would not be able to do that. I'm joined today by a legal fellow in the Mies Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. It's good to have with us today, Zach Smith. Zach, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
Because we only have a few minutes, and I do want to bring you back again to talk about this in greater detail, but this is an 800-page bill. If you were to outline all the problems, how much room would you need? And to that point, just under the Constitution, you know, the states are the ones who supposedly determine how they do their elections, including federal elections. The bill undoes that completely and a whole lot of other things. What concerns you the most?
Well, how much time do you have to talk about it? Well, look, unfortunately, this bill does a lot of troubling things. It really infringes on voters' first freedoms, just like you were talking about, would require the IRS to review the policies and procedures of nonprofit organizations before granting them nonprofit status. You know, think back to Lois Lerner and the IRS scandal a few years ago. Oh, yeah. We don't have to imagine how this could be abused. And then look, it ultimately transfers most election procedures from the state and the state legislatures where they belong to the federal government. And not only does it transfer it to the federal government, this bill would mandate that states not enact certain common sense reforms that would help protect the integrity of our elections. It would prohibit states from requiring photo ID to vote. It would essentially mandate all states to provide no excuse absentee voting to voters, and then prohibit those states from requiring things like affidavits or certain other verification mechanisms. Like we heard Kevin McCarthy say, it would require automatic voter registration. This means that non-citizens and other ineligible voters are most likely going to be registered to vote. And then it would prohibit states from using some of those same databases to make sure that their voter rolls are accurate and up to date. And so, look, we could go on and on and on. But this is a, like you said, a behemoth of a bill, one with many, many problems. And I would strongly urge all of your listeners to contact their senators to oppose this bill.
Groups like the ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, and others, It puts burdens on nonprofit groups. I can't imagine these guys are very happy with it. Not, just as conservative groups wouldn't be. Is everybody upset with this? Yeah, give me your take.
Well, certainly with that aspect. I mean, look, very rarely are you going to find, you know, my organization, right. Heritage Foundation, right. And the ACLU, same side of an issue.
I agree.
But we're on the same side.
That's so funny.
With some of these First Amendment concerns. And so that should flag for you. Just how problematic, just how egregious, really, some of these provisions are.
So what can we do? I only have a moment or two left. I'm just curious. I mean, what you know, a lot of listeners right now feel very powerless about this. 800-page behemoth bill, as you point out. What can be done?
It's passed the House of Representatives. It's in the Senate. The most important thing that your listeners can do right now is contact your senators. Let your senators know that this is not a good bill on policy grounds, on constitutional grounds, and they should oppose it, as vigorously as possible.
Amen.
And so I think that's the best thing everyone can do right now.
Well, I'm assuming you write about this. People can follow you, I know, on Twitter and his Twitter handle is at T, as in Thomas, Z, Smith. So TZ Smith, at TZ Smith, follow him there. And of course, heritage.org is a great place. Good resources there for everyone?
Absolutely. I've written about it. My colleague Hans von Sikowski has written about
awesome.
It. And you can find out about this and many of the other troubling bills coming out of the House right now at heritage.org.
Well, Zach, thank you. I wish we had more time. I'll bring it back because this is not going away. But I appreciate you making time and for your patience today. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
That's Zach Smith. Legal fellow there, the Heritage Foundation as well. Look, this is one of those times when Catholics need to stand up for their rights. And that's why I bring this to you. If you read the Acts of the Apostles closely, what do you see? You notice St. Paul used every secular political right that he could, including an appeal to the emperor, right? So we need to get involved. So often when you sit here, you listen, oh, that's terrible, Drew. What are we going to do? You need to get involved in your political process. You need to call your senators. You need to be aware of what's happening. That's my duty. I'm trying to inform you. You need to strongly oppose this bill so that our natural right to freedom of speech is not hampered. And I hope that's why you join me every afternoon. I try to give you a look at life. You're not going to get anywhere else. And try to give you a moral perspective on it and a call to action, whether it's dealing with race or so many of our other freedoms that we have here. So. On a separate note, in just about a moment or two, we're going to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And do me a favor, call your family now or call your friends or call somebody that you are close with and have them tune in. You can go to relevantradio.com and stream the show. If they're in another part of the country, you could listen on your mobile app or the station that you're now listening on. At the top of the hour, before we pray the chaplet, and we'll pray together, I have something I want to share with you. It's something I've been wanting to share with you for a very long time, and it's something I'm really, really excited about. I am very, very excited about this. And what I'm about to share with you is not just a blessing to me and for me. It's going to be a blessing for you. I'm telling you, this is exciting. You know, we're about to pray the chaplet, and this chaplet, I think, has been given at this particular moment in history. You know, just as the rosary was given, and we know that it has defeated the Albigensian heresies, and, you know, it has thwarted wars, and the fruit of the rosary is just absolutely off the chart. God has given it a divine anointing. And just prior to one of the bloodiest wars in human history, right, in the darkest centuries, you take a look at the 20th century and all the evils that came forth from that. You take a look at the Hitlers and the Stalins and the Maos and the contraceptive mentality, the culture of death that has become worshipped and championed today in our own culture. And a litany of other things. I don't have to go through them. You know them. God gave us the prayer that we're about to engage in. He gave us the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And this is a prayer that brings about miracles. It is a prayer that vanquishes, I believe, evil. It disengages that demonic spirit of abortion, of the culture of death. And miracles abound. The Lord, just like the rosary, gave it many, many promises. So when we come back, we'll pray this prayer, you know, this prayer given to the first saint of the new millennium, Saint Faustina, and we'll pray together. But call your loved ones, because I'm going to grab a pen and paper. I want to give you something. You can jot it down and be some of the first when I come back to be able to tap into this, okay? So I'm excited. Just seconds away. We'll be back in just a minute, and I'll break this news with you. I've been praying for a while, and I think this is going to bless you. So stay with me. Chapel of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. Plus something that, boy, I wanted to tell you a long time ago. I'll be right back. We'll get into that and more.
I wanted to thank you first off, and thanks to Relevant Radio for helping me return to my faith and helping me deepen my faith, which has just been an incredible journey.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media, Relevant Radio.